Hey, welcome to my show, Feng Shui Your Way on UK Health Radio. I'm Janine Lo, your go-to Feng Shui consultant and Chinese astrologer. I've been helping people transform their lives for over 20 years, from private clients to big names and businesses, and I can't wait to share my tips and stories with you. My guest today is author Demi Rolsey, whose remarkable book, Body and Grace, A Hike to Wholeness on the Pacific Crest Trail, shares her deeply personal journey of transformation through long-distance walking. What began as a physical adventure became something far more profound, a path through grief, a self-discovery, resilience, and ultimately inner peace. Her story reminds us that sometimes healing doesn't arrive through striving harder, but through slowing down, listening, and allowing nature to guide us back to who we really are. Today, we'll explore how walking can change the mind, how solitude can become a teacher, and why it's never too late to begin a new chapter. Demi, welcome to UK Health Radio.
Oh, so thank you for having me today. I'm excited.
Demi, for listeners meeting for you for the first time, how would you describe yourself and the work you do today?
I would say I'm a zestful or an active ager. Yeah. I'll be 79 next month.
Wow.
And I'm still walking, hiking, exercising, moving, doing with friends and people who are younger than I, because not too many people my age can do or want to do what I do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. A lot of people are like sitting at home knitting. Although there's nothing wrong with knitting, because I actually knit for charity. So, but you know what you do is amazing. Your book shares a deeply personal journey. What first inspired you to begin a long-distance walking?
Throughout my life, I had done some walking. I grew up in Europe, so I walked. And so it was not uncommon to take a walk, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Children, every Sunday, the family went out for a walk. So that was not uncommon. Moving to the States, though, where things are car-centric, I had to kind of really work on it. And for a while I lived in the country and it wasn't easy to go for walks. But, you know, there are other ways of moving. You know, I did other forms of exercise or yoga, and I gardened. I was an active person, but nothing extreme. Because I guess what I've been doing is pretty extreme. Most people won't do that.
I mean, we're not just get to hear what you've done. So you began these adventures in your 60s.
Exactly.
What was happening in your life at the time that made you step onto the trail where the book comes from?
I had done some hiking when things were really bad during my husband's decline. I went to the Himalayas. I'd been in India before, and I had done a long hike to Everest Base Camp, which really was my boyfriend's doing, not mine. But I walked it, you know. We did that for 3 weeks. And but India had been a place where I had found solace. I'd found a teacher. I started meditating. And I needed to figure out somehow how to deal with my husband's decline and personality changes. He had a pretty severe. And how I would take care of him, or could I take care of him. So I had heard from a friend about Ladakh, which starts at 13,000 feet, and it's up. It's all above tree line, and I just felt like I wanted to get lost in that endless, empty nature, which I did. She helped me, got me a guide, and I did that. There, I found out that just walking, breathing, stepping, excuse me, about all you can do when you're at 15 or 16,000 feet, really cleared my mind and let me clear what my next steps would be. Still didn't think about repeating that for any reason. It wasn't an athletic adventure, but it did teach me something. So after my husband passed, I felt the urge to just get to know Oregon, find, you know, who am I now question. And I thought, you know, I'd heard about Pacific Crest Trail. I'm going to hike the Pacific Crest Trail here in Oregon. I'd done short hikes, 3 days, maybe five at some point, but never anything longer. And so I set out in 2012 on my first 200-plus mile hike. I was still working, and I was able to take enough time off from work, and I'd done the ends of the trail in Southern Oregon as I was training for it, because you do need to train for it.
Yeah.
And I set off to do that.
So how long, just out of, is the Pacific Crest Trail? How long is that?
Oh, it runs from Mexico to Canada through three states. It's 2,650 miles long.
And you've done the whole of that?
I've done all of that, but not in one, you know, two hike, as they call it. Every year, I did it over 10 years. Every year I would go out for a month or 3 weeks, and sometimes I just filled in pieces that were missing. Eventually, after 15, first I just started doing, I like this. So next, I had heard about the Sierras. Let's do the JMT. I found someone to go with me. We did half of it that year. And so I would find things that I was drawn to. Never thought of doing the whole thing.
So I know that you're going to laugh at this, right? Because obviously I'm not this. This is not my thing. I'll do 10K steps a day and 20,000 if I'm lucky. Yeah. So there's not your average hotel on these walks. So you had to, you know, just saying. So you had to pack
everything.
So you, not only were you hiking, you had a huge backpack as well.
Well, I learned that first year I got the lightest backpack that existed then, and that pack actually I used the whole 10 years. It it was an ultralight backpack which weighed only close to 2 pounds, but not even 2 pounds. And most people have packs that are 4 or 5 pounds, just the pack alone. But I knew already that I had to reduce the weight. And yes, I carried, I left the first, I weighed it. It was 34 pounds. With food for, you know, in the beginning, I carried too much food. I didn't know quite how to do that. I learned a lot while I was doing it. And too much water, and water weighs a lot. So usually the pack at the beginning is a little under 30 pounds. So I carried 30 pounds, which I'll tell you, my bone density increased as I was doing this every year.
Yeah, really. So you didn't, you know.
Yeah.
So what actually made you, I think I've jumped about a bit, but what actually made you start walking? I think, you know, off screen, we've talked about you were going through the menopause and starting to put on weight. Can you explain that to our listeners?
Well, that wasn't really the reason why I started walking.
No,
I needed to lose weight, and I lost some through, actually, I joined a crew, a rowing club,
right,
when I was 58.
What?
And that's,
you're putting me to shame here.
That's where I lost weight and I became fit. And that became my support, because I don't think I could have so easily gone off for a month on the Pacific Crest Trail if I hadn't been fit enough to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I did some training, and I learned what training was needed. I later, you know, I wrote the book Walking Gone Wild, where I teach people how to do this, and give them training schedules and stuff. But that wasn't available in those days. I had to figure it out by myself, because walking was still like an alien thing here in America, I'll tell you that. So,
One of the questions I want to ask before we go to the break is, what fears did you have before starting, and which one surprised you the most once you're actually out there? So, because we have our fears beforehand, don't we?
Yes.
And then the other one. So what can you explain to our listeners what
it was? The fear of being alone in the woods or in the mountains all by myself, because I started this trail out. That was the first time I went all by myself.
Mm.
I didn't have a guide. I didn't have any other people around me. And that first night was indeed, sometimes you meet people and you sleep in a similar area. But that night I was alone. I hung myself. I sort of tucked myself in the woods where nobody could see me, I hoped.
Yeah.
And but I wasn't too afraid of people. I thought, what animals are going to come along at night, you know?
And what animals did come along at night?
I don't know. I slept.
I love
seriously.
That.
Healthy sleeper, and I woke to birdsong, and really early.
Yeah, lovely.
And that was it. It was like, oh, this isn't so bad, you know. I do things to make myself feel. I snuggle up in my sleeping bag. I had a hammock at the time, so it was inside a hammock with a cover over it, so you couldn't really see me. But
you're making it sound all snuggly and cozy, but my idea is completely different. Your bear will be walking past, etc. We're just going to go to our sponsors. After the break, we'll explore what happens when nature becomes a teacher and how the trail transforms Amy's understanding of. For now, I will just hand over to our sponsors.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, we're back. Your writing beautifully connects nature and emotional healing. What does being in the wilderness awaken that everyday life often suppresses?
There's expansiveness, there's space, there are no, the regular stimuli aren't there. You're just you, your body moving, the wind, the sun, the views, but it's very calming for the nervous system, you know. So you start emptying out. I was a meditator already before I did that, and I discovered that walking like that is like walking meditation. I became very focused on getting from A to B, not so much to get there, but just maneuvering for safety reason, even, you know, look where you put your feet. And you know, so the sense of being there, like I said, it was expansive. And in that expansiveness, I found a real quietness inside me, which allowed me to feel things that normally I wouldn't even pay attention to, because it all sits there. I have a history of being a body-mind worker. You know, I knew that. It sits in your muscles. All trauma, all things that we experience that don't just sort of wash away in everyday living, the deeper things, they just stay in your muscles. So when you're working your muscles intensely in your breathing and there are no other distractions, things will come to the surface and get to know how deep your grief is.
Yeah, your voice is very, very easy to listen to. I can't meditate, but I find that you're taking me on this journey with you, and I feel like I'm walking along this path of nature with you. So you're very good at that, and I'm sure this is what comes over in the book. So you speak openly in the book about grief and loss. How did walking help you process that?
As I said, the emotions will come to the surface, but you're walking, you keep walking. And again, that is like in meditation, when something arises, they teach you to just be with it, watch it go, not attach to it, not try to solve it, just be with it. So the same when you're walking, the emotion is there. I did express my emotions sometimes. If I had just climbed up and I was in a big open snowfield, sometimes I would just, you know, cry out to the sky, the universe. I started more like relating to other forces that I couldn't see, yeah, but I could feel. Mm-hmm. And, you know, over the 10 years, I discovered, and that's why I called it body and grace. You need to have a body that can do this, a strong body, but the grace is a force. It's a benevolent force that exists in the universe that we don't often, you know, become aware of. But it had to be there because it saved me from all kinds of possible dangers and accidents and things that could have happened. And it was always with me. And I started trusting it.
So you felt the spirits were beside you.
Exactly.
Mm.
Some people may call it God, whatever you want to call it. You know, I liked that there's a benevolent force. And if I, you know, surrender to that, if I go trust that that's with me, it will be. It will be with me. And that has made that journey into a real spiritual journey. And that has spilled over into my everyday life. You know, I trust.
Yeah, because a lot of us, me included, because I'm a bit of a fight and flight, write a book, got to do this, got to do that. I'm always on the go. But many of us struggle with mental overwhelm. I mean, you know, it was interesting you said it resonates in our muscles and everything. So for people who aren't going to be able, well, they're going to be able to buy your book, which we'll talk about at the end, but what would you give their first steps if people have got this mental overwhelm and walking in nature? Where, you know, what was your tips on that?
Yeah, so I would say if you feel that mental overwhelm, turn off your devices, sit for a few minutes and watch your breath. Start there. You don't even have to walk. But like you, I'm kind of a busybody. I'm always doing something. So for many of us, walking is, you know, you can turn your walking into a meditation. Don't listen to a book on tapes. Don't listen to music. If you can, hopefully, you know, it's more difficult. I write about that in Walking Gone Wild. If you live in a city, but find a park, find a quieter place where you're not exposed to all the noise all the time and just watch your steps. Start there.
Perfect.
And just see how you feel after 10 minutes doing that.
Yeah, I can already guess. So stay with us, everybody. After the break, we'll talk about how listeners can bring these lessons into their own lives, even if they never hike a mountain.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movement and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So, we're back. You described the trail as completing the walker as much as the walker completes the trail. What do you mean by that?
Yes. So, people often look at it, especially the younger people, as an athletic feat, you know. Can I do that many miles a day? Can I go that distance? Look at me. You know, it's ego building.
Right.
I found I couldn't do that many miles, although I did quite a few, especially in the first few years. The first year, I averaged 17 miles a day. By the end,
17 miles a day. Goodness.
Yeah, yeah. And you can probably do, like you were saying, you like to walk. You can probably do 20K, you know, or but to do a day in, day out, that requires, you know, a sturdiness, carrying a pack on top of that. You have to train for that. You have to make your body ready for that. But, you know, we don't all need to do it that way at all. So, I lost my train of thought.
You're allowed. I was saying you described the trail as completing the walk as much as the trail.
The trail teaches. That's what everybody says. You find out what you're made of, you know. Do you just, you know, hunker down in a puddle when you look at a 4,000-foot elevation gain? Or do you say, well, let me see how I can do this? And each time you overcome, not every day is just full of difficulties. There are these easier parts that when you're going, you know, on an easy slope and the hills are just covered with flowers. I mean, you're just in heaven.
Yeah.
But there are those days. And so you find out what you're made of. Is what I say, okay, we got to do this 3,000 climb. It's 90 degrees. Do we have enough water? How am I going to break that down? So I get there. I want to get there. I mean, that wasn't the first. Oregon wasn't that hard in comparison to some of the other states. So I learned how to break it down into small bits and pieces. Okay, I do 25 steps if it was really hard, and I'm taking a break. Right. You know, not about getting there. So you find out what you're made of. That's what the trail will teach you. Mm-hmm. And because it's not like, well, I'll suffer through it, and then I go home and take a bath. No, you got to do it again the next day.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to find a pace and a way of doing it that you can maintain. And that is, I mean, the best thing you can learn in life is how do I maintain under difficult circumstances?
Yeah.
So, yes, I completed it because that was really fascinating to me. Like, what do I have in me? Can I get stronger as I get older rather than weaker, you know? And not that I want to be so buff or so very, very strong, but I would like to age, as I said in the beginning, with grace and healthfully and, you know, enjoy myself and not be stuck, not be limited.
So as you said, Grace, what does body angry grace mean to you? What is it?
Yeah. For me, it's, the combination of self, the body, and what we're given in life, what we do with it, for one thing, I had that up on my website for a while. Mary Oliver says, you know, what are you doing with your one and precious life? You know, we have a choice about what we do with it. And I discovered that actively engaging in the world around me, and I have chosen to live in pretty wild places, actively engaging, you know, has just enriched my life so much. So I'm also very grateful. I was given a pretty sturdy body. I'm not, you know, really lean or anything. I was made of stuff, and it could handle that kind of stress. And I have to say to women, our bodies are way better on the long trail than men's bodies. We have bodies that will hold weight when we're under stress because we're meant to be childbearing. And so we don't lose as much weight as men do. We don't have to carry as much food either. And we can just go. Women are good for the long run. I discovered that, you know. Then also, I discovered that, you know, it isn't me. I mean, it's just amazing. I really did that. I would look back. I would look at, you know, the distances behind me and the environments I went through and the narrow escapes at times of, you know, getting through really difficult.
Example. What were these like?
Oh my God. It's in the book, but on a stretch near in California, when we had to go through kind of, it's a snowy area in the spring. So I had avoided it, but because I would be there to hike in the spring when it wasn't too hot. And then I would hit that mountainous area, sometimes deep snow. So the year that I went, the snow wasn't that deep. That was good. I went with somebody else. And I had read that two years before, a big rock had broken off and blocked off the trail. Mm-hmm. So, the year before, a man it was very icy, he slipped off that trail 70 foot down and he died. Wow. So we knew that was a treacherous area. Can I get around it? There were some videos about it and I saw they had strung a rope around it. But you had to basically hang onto that rope. You couldn't go over the rock. You couldn't go under it. It was too narrow with your pack. You had to go around it. So you're hanging over that 70-foot precipice. Yeah.
No. You are made of very tough stuff, lady.
No, I'd given myself permission to say, if this looks really dangerous, I'm not doing it. We'll go back and we'll find a way out. We'll go around it. We come back to the trail somewhere. I don't need to do this. Again, grace. There was a woman, a Czech woman ahead of us, very strong, in her like 40 years old, legs like made of tree trunks. I said, would you be willing to help us when we get there? Would you wait for us when we get there? And she did. And she took our packs so I could go around it without a pack on my back. I could not have even stepped up to that ledge with a pack on. It was too steep. Yeah. So grace, again, I mean, having that happen got me around it.
Yeah. So someone's watching over you. So you've been doing it for the last 10 years, yeah? And so as you've aged, because ultimately people aren't going to be able to do what you're doing, are they? Because one, they don't want to, or two, their bodies can't do it, but they want to have the healing power of undertaking a 2,000-mile hike. Have you got any suggestions that they could do now? I know we said go around the park or whatever, but you know what you've talked to me about is what you've made me feel, that I want to have the feelings that you've had being in the wilderness. Now I know you said turn off the electrics, turn off that sort of thing, but you've shown me, and I'm sure the listeners, the absolute amazing thing that has happened to you for doing that over the 10 years. Is that, you know, is there a simple thing that you could tell our listeners to do? And I know
we always want a simple solution.
Yeah, because
you don't have to do that. there are other women my age who have not done that, who also are managing to age gracefully and with strength. But you need to move. Move your body. It's in our DNA. We need to move. And not just move from your couch to the kitchen to get another.
Yeah, I know. So basically you said, if someone listening feels it may be too late to start something new, what would you say to them? And I know you're going to say, get off the couch. Just do it. Any other words than that?
Well, you know, it is not too late to extend your, you know, to go beyond your edges. And doing just that act of doing it, you know, you start with 10 minutes, then maybe more, and you need to commit to yourself. Say, how do I want to age? And I want to speak especially to women in their 40s and 50s, early 60s. You have no idea how much power is still in your body. You get this extra boost of testosterone that happens after you're through menopause. You feel stronger. You feel buff. You don't have the distraction of bleeding every month. It's
good.
Take advantage of it.
So when people, what do you hope readers feel or discover? Actually, explain to me on the listeners, what is in the book? How does it start? What is it going to come out? How are you going to feel? That sort of thing. You've got 3 minutes. Take full advantage of it.
Okay. Thank you. Well, the book is a combination of emotions that happened, and I've done that in the form of poems in between the chapters.
Oh.
The book follows the trail as I hiked it through the years. So for people who've done some of the PCT, they will recognize the stretches. I mentioned where I was, what altitude it was, you know, the difficulties. But it is not it's not a travelogue. So I would pick, you know, my first night alone, or I would pick getting around, you know, almost getting lost in the middle of the night. Just things that people have fears about and how I dealt with it and how I encountered them. So I think people can translate that to their own life. So how would I deal with that? Or what's the essence sometimes of grief when I'm walking through cobwebs that happen early in the morning? Oh, it's beautiful. When the sun shines through the trees, you get these, the spiders have done that, and you break them as you walk. You know, I do a poem about that, of breaking the connection, the loss, you know, and the tears are like the little droplets in the web, you know. So I've tried to convey funny and tragic and other things in my poems, you know, also like the things that you deal with every day, you know, the things that you need on a trail, you know. I have one poem about the 10 essential things when you're doing this long distance hike. It's kind of funny, yeah. But you need them, you know, and how they save you every time again. So I would say engage in something you can get passionate about, and it doesn't have to be long distance hiking, but something that connects with your heart, your inner feelings. And do it and dedicate yourself to it. And it can be creativity. And if you're just someone who is a painter or an artist or takes care of dogs like you, that's your passion. Well, walk the dogs, you know, find a way around it. If you're stuck in an artistic endeavor, go out for a walk. Move your body around what you're doing. So turn your passion into a live movement in your life, you know, and then I think you will age with zest and gracefully.
Yeah. So listeners, Demi's book, Body and Grace, A Hike to Wholeness on the Pacific Crest Trail. Can you pre-order it yet on Amazon?
Yes, it's for pre-order on Amazon. It will come out the April 1st. And people can go to my website and learn more about different ways of being active and making the best of their life. And that's transformation-travel.com. You can also follow me on Facebook. I have a Facebook page called Walk with Dami, D-A-M-I. And a walking group is connected to that, where people share what they do and can do or cannot do and all their woes about staying active.
Right, I'm going to go and check that out. So, Dami, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and your journey with us today. Thank you. What I take from our conversation is the reminder that healing doesn't always come through dramatic change, although your journey was very dramatic. Sometimes it comes through small, steady steps, through breathing, noticing, and reconnecting with the rhythm of life itself. For anyone listening today, perhaps the invitation is simply to step outside, slow down, and allow yourself to be present with the world around you and with yourself. And buy Dami's book.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure. And I hope the readers will really enjoy reading it and be inspired.
Thank you, Dami. Thanks so much for tuning in to Feng Shui Your Way. I can't wait to share more insights and inspirations with you in the next episode. Remember, life is all about creating harmony and welcoming positive energy into your world. Until next time, stay balanced and keep your energy flowing.